have now, Mike. Okay. Welcome to Authentic News right here on RBN Live, this 21st day of December 2023. Stories for today begin with Ukraine's citizen army struggling with a hidden enemy, combat stress, no doubt about it. When you're being wiped out on the battlefield, that's extremely stressful. Donetsk region, psychotherapist Oleh Pukoisky stands behind a whiteboard of a makeshift classroom in eastern Ukraine and addresses a group of soldiers attending a session on how to cope with the stress of war. The former psychiatrist joined the armed forces about 6 months after Russia launched a full-scale invasion in February 2022 and now runs a psychological support group attached to the 67th separate mechanized brigade in the direction of the ruined town of Lyman. There's more on this order. Here we have another from the Wall Street Journal. Ukraine's frontline troops are getting older. Physically, I can't handle this. Provorov, Ukraine, during a break from fighting the Russians, an avuncular rifleman recalled how he was going for a haircut one day when he was press ganged into joining the Ukrainian army. He wasn't happy about it, and it hasn't worked out well for him. He's still among the living. Meanwhile, Ukraine's army wants, guess the number, from the Truth Seeker, 500,000 more soldiers to join the fight against Russia, says Volodymyr Zelensky. Where do you think he's going to get them? Ukraine's military want 500,000 more Ukrainians to be mobilized into its armed forces in what would mark a dramatic step up of Kiev's war with Russia. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told his end-of-year news conference Tuesday it was a highly sensitive issue that the military and government were discussing before sending to Parliament. But where are they going to come from? I mean, this is virtually ridiculous. Here we have Colonel McGregor, also on the Truth Seeker. 500,000 Ukrainian soldiers have died, 10 times worse than World War I. This war is done. Check it out.
New York City, really a minority of Americans, well-financed, unfortunately, with a lot of political influence, managed to drag this administration and Congress, who is always eager to join any conflict which they see as access to cash and money for their own purposes, into a war that should never have happened. We have no real interest as I'm talking about the American people. We have no interest in the destruction of Russia. It's absurd. We've had actually pretty good relations with the Russians, and contrary to what people say, Russia is not a menacing bad actor that is constantly interested in harming us. On the other hand, you can make a pretty good case that certainly since 2000, we have fallen into that category regarding Russia. So what's happened? We grossly miscalculated, underestimated the Russians. No one studied carefully the potential strength that Russia had, or its ability to respond to an existential threat, which is what Ukraine became. Everyone overestimated our ability to exploit a proxy and stand up an army in the space of a few years that could stand up to the Russian military establishment. And, we've gone from, Putin has to go, his regime has to be destroyed. We need new leadership. We're going to, disintegrate Russia as a state. We're going to harm it. We're going to weaken it so that it can't go anywhere else and threaten anybody else. Of course, Russia was no threat to Eastern Europe when this began. And if it is now, it certainly isn't something Russia wanted to be. It is because of what we've done. Yeah. Russia today is more powerful militarily and certainly economically than it's been since the 1980s. And that's largely as a response, a consequence of a response to us and what we did in Ukraine. It's tragic. It's unfortunate. Now, the same group of people, I think, are trying to drag us into a major regional conflict in the Middle East. And barring that, I'm sure they'll do everything in their power to create conflict with China. Remember, you've got a lot of people that are heavily involved and invested in stupidity like this because they've made millions of dollars from it. either in think tanks or through investments with the defense industries or overseas foreign powers. The United States is at the end of a long and destructive period in our history that really began in the aftermath of 1991. We went through this during the Vietnam War. We recovered from that, came out of it with the goal of never doing it again. But then the consequences of having been victorious in 91 created the illusion of victory over everybody anytime we wanted with minimal loss. And that's brought us to this disastrous situation where we have a $33 trillion sovereign national debt that we can't possibly retire. We're having trouble just financing the government as it is. An economy that is in terrible conditions, it's shredded because we have voluntarily deported or exported our manufacturing base and the jobs with it. And a population that is reeling in shock from uncontrolled immigration, rising criminality, open borders, all these things together.
Right.
I don't think it can go on much longer. But people like Richard Haas and Cook Can and a host of others, Bill Kristol, just go down the list. They've all been pushing these bad policies, and now the proverbial chickens have come home to roost.
Yeah, that's a very good insight. And I think, how are we going to see this play out? Because I think what we've seen largely, you know, here in the United States, most Americans are done supporting Ukraine. I mean, they don't want to see, like you just listed, the plethora of issues that are facing our country. And I think we're really fed up saying, hey, we don't want to send another $100 billion to Ukraine for the effort of a stalemate for another 2 years. How does this end? How does this officially end? Is Ukraine going to be hang out left to dry? I mean, what is going to be the next step here?
I think the Ukrainian nation is destroyed. Let's be frank. You had 500,000 Ukrainian dead in the Ukrainian armed forces. I don't know how many civilians have been killed. I don't know exactly how many wounded, but I know that you're looking at 500,000 dead Ukrainian soldiers.
Right.
And to put this into perspective, in World War One, we Americans, for 110 days during 1918. And in the 110-day period, we sustained 318,000 casualties, of whom 110,000 died. That means, on average, 1,000 dead in every battle for every day that we fought.
Right.
You're looking at World War One scale of losses on the human side that we just can't even begin to comprehend it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ukraine was a much smaller nation than we were during the First World War. It's certainly smaller now. I don't know how many Ukrainians were really present in Ukraine when this began, because millions had fled long before the war began because of the corruption and lack of employment. So what is their population now down to? That is the population that lives under, theoretically, Ukrainian administration. 20 million, 19 million, 18 million? I don't know.
Right.
What's clear is that it's over because the United States government and the American media and financial committees have all changed the topic.
Right.
It reminds me of Vietnam. What happened at the end of Vietnam? We left.
Right.
People stopped talking about it. It was over.
Yeah.
And again, this is something that Americans don't get, and most of the people that either work with us or against us don't understand. We are preeminently a maritime and aerospace power. We are not a land power anywhere in the world except in the Western Hemisphere. So what this means is that at the end of the day, if things don't go our way, we don't like what's happened, it doesn't suit us, we fly away, we sail away,
yeah.
We're finished. But for the Chinese, for the Russians, for the Iranians, you know, for the Arabs, for whomever, Africans, doesn't matter where you go, they live in the region.
Right.
They're stuck with it, and they're stuck with the consequences of our intervention.
Yeah.
And our interventions have always distorted the normal dynamics in the region. And our argument for being there was, well, we're bringing everybody goodness and happiness and democracy and prosperity. And, oh, by the way, our presence there is stabilizing and preventing conflict. Well, that's all nonsense.
Right.
The opposite is being the case. So I think, you know, Ukraine will stop coming up for discussion. And we'll now talk almost exclusively about the Middle East, and of course, you know, the Chinese threat to another pristine liberal democracy that sits offshore in Taiwan that must be defended at all costs. Again, nonsense.
Well, how does this look from the American perspective? I mean, is this a huge loss of face for us that we were pledging hundreds of billions of dollars? I mean, our stated goal when this was to drive Russia back to pre-invasion war lines. And that was very loud and clear. And does this really send a signal to our adversaries around the world? I mean, are they looking at America like, wow, you guys just completely messed that up? And I mean, does this mean that we're just not as strong as we thought we were?
Well, I think that's abundantly clear.
Yeah,
we are not the nation we were 30 years ago. Far from it. We don't have the societal cohesion. We don't have the forces that we had 30 years ago, and our forces have not kept pace with the changes in the international environment. Our way of looking at the world is stuck in about 1992.
Right.
No one seems to understand that the world itself over the last 30 years has changed profoundly. That's another problem.
Right.
Americans have lived in a world where they thought of themselves as being at the center of it. We're not.
Right.
We're a great power. And we certainly have a role to play, but the notion that we are the center of the universe is about as lunatic as the ancient Chinese version of seeing themselves at the center of the world and everyone else beyond them as a barbarian.
Right.
Oh, that was never realistic either.
Right.
And, you know, you say, well, do Americans realize this? No, Americans, overwhelming majority, pay very little attention to what happens beyond their borders.
That's all
they. In fact, they don't even pay attention to what's happening in Washington or inside their own country. As long as they get their, you know, retirement checks, their pension checks, or their paychecks for whatever job they have, or as long as they can drive a car that they own and they have a house or whatever. In other words, as long as their standard of living is not demonstrably affected, they tend to ignore things.
Sure. Yeah.
So if you go back through Chinese history, when did you get dynastic change in China? When people couldn't eat.
Right.
You don't need to be a genius to figure these things out. So when did the French Revolution break out in 1789 when the population could not afford to buy bread?
Right.
So these are simply facts. So Americans, no, I don't think Americans have figured it out.
No.
And remember, the Americans want to believe that wherever we go, we do good things, and that our soldiers, sailors, and airmen are all great people, and they're being used to do good things.
Yeah, that's certainly the message that's being preached here. I mean,
simply wonderful for McGregor, puts everything in broad perspective. He's among the wise sources we have to contemplate what's taking place here. Meanwhile, Ukraine is declaring, and I think this is because they don't have the troops anymore, because they're all dead. They're not going to be able to field another 500,000-man army. Ukraine to produce 1 million FPV drones next year, according to their minister, Reuters. Kiev plans to produce 1 million FPV first-person view drones, widely in demand on the front line, for more than 11,000 medium and long time and more than 11,000 medium and long range attack drones next year, Ukraine's Minister for Strategic Industries said on Wednesday. Ukraine intensively uses FPV drones, small drones originally for personal civilian use, but modified for the battlefield, since the first days of the 2022 Russian invasion is a cheap but effective option for reconnaissance and attacks. The tactic was subsequently adopted by Moscow's troops, now estimated to have many more such drones at their disposal. Well, as McGregor is suggesting, in fact, the war is already over. Here's a suggestion from responsible statecraft that Ukraine should have taken a page out of Finland's fight with Stalin, where Helsinki had to sacrifice territory for autonomy, but its pride and prosperity soared. As public support for Ukraine has waned over time in Washington, public policy elites are shifting their focus more toward the conflict in Gaza. An endgame for Ukraine is desperately needed. U.S. and European officials have reportedly broached the issue of possible peace negotiations with their Ukrainian counterparts. This begs the question, what would a peace treaty between Kiev and Moscow look like? One historical instance stands up among many as a potential model for how the Russo-Ukrainian war could end. the Winter War, or the Soviet-Finnish War, that took place from November of 1939 to March of 1940, and was renewed by the Finns as allies of Germany between June of 1941 and September of 1944, has drawn some comparisons with the ongoing conflict between Ukraine and Russia. After Finland rejected an ultimatum to concede a considerable portion of its territory and the Soviet signing of the 1939 Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, Joseph Stalin's Red Army invaded Finland to install a puppet communist Finnish government and eliminate a potential hostile presence near the Soviet Union's second city and only Baltic port of Leningrad. Similar to the initial phase of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Soviet official predicted that Helsinki would fall to Soviet troops in as little as 3 days. However, the Soviets, outnumbering the Finns and soldiers by 3-1, Helsinki nevertheless succeeded in holding off the Red Army for more than 3 months, inflicting extremely heavy casualties on the invading forces. And by the way, in this engagement, I've been informed, the Soviets did not wear camouflage or winter clothing. They were very conspicuous against the background. The Finns were well dug in, and they had a world-class sniper, perhaps the greatest in the world, with more than 500 confirmed kills, who wreaked immense damage upon the Soviets. Although Finland was eventually defeated and forced to concede about 11% of its territory, the Finns scored a moral victory. It's widely considered the grit and courage of Finland's resistance convinced Stalin that incorporating Finland into the Soviet Union or turning it into a communist client state like Poland would be more trouble than it was worth. This also contributed to Stalin's eventual agreement to sign a peace treaty with Finland in 1944 in return for a small amount of additional territory and a commitment on Helsinki's part to neutrality. Finland thus became the only part of the former Russian Empire that was not incorporated into the Soviet Union under Lenin and Stalin. I do think that is a model. Finland, in my opinion, has made a colossal blunder by joining NATO. I do not believe this is going to play out well for the Finns, but as a model for Ukraine, bear in mind now that several peace proposals have been on the table before that have been vetoed by the United States, insisting that the war continue. Meanwhile, war on Gaza live, a U.S. raises concern over a U.N. resolution to boost Gaza aid. A report released Thursday by a U.N.-backed organization said that all 2.3 million residents of Gaza are experiencing critical levels of hunger, with a threat of famine escalating daily. According to a report by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, the percentage of families in Gaza experiencing severe acute food insecurity is the highest ever documented worldwide. I'll be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
In what I regard as a major development, Hezbollah has struck two Iron Dome facilities, air defense units, in a new escalation. Yet this, following over 2 months of escalating hostilities between Israeli forces and the Lebanese militia Hezbollah, which were initiated by the latter in response to Israel's initiated ground operations in the Gaza Strip, Hezbollah has reportedly begun to target Israeli air defense assets. A number of local media outlets have reported that strikes on December 18th for the first time hit two Iron Dome surface-to-air missile batteries. The Iron Dome is the lowest tier in Israel's multi-layered air defense network. Is intended to intercept short-range, low-altitude, and relatively low-cost assets, such as rocket artillery and small drones. This contrasts to systems such as the Barak 8 and David Sling, which are optimized to targeting assets such as aircraft and ballistic missiles. When both Hezbollah and Palestinian militias in the Gaza, which are optimized, relying heavily on a range of market artillery assets that strike Israeli targets, eroding the capabilities of the Iron Dome as a potential to serve as a force multiplier for future attacks. Hezbollah also deploys a range of drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles. In fact, Colonel McGregor has compared, Hezbollah in relation to Hamas. It's like a pro team versus a high school. It's on that order. Meanwhile, Israeli officials are acknowledging they may have to do something about it. Here it comes. This is from the Libertarian Institute. Officials say Israel nearing full-scale war against Hezbollah, which I guarantee is going to be very, very bad for Israel. Remember, Hezbollah already defeated Israel in Lebanon about 10 years ago. It is a very formidable force. And even Scott Ritter has observed, if Hezbollah enters the fray, they will take northern Israel, and there's nothing the Israelis can do about it. Israeli officials said Tel Aviv is moving closer to a full-scale war with Hezbollah. The IDF and Hezbollah have traded fire along the Lebanese-Liber border since October 7th. IDF spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conrica said Monday, "We are closer today to war with Hezbollah than we were yesterday. And the direction of the IDF is, of course, to enhance readiness to prepare the capabilities of defending Israeli civilians." At a separate event, Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant explained that if resisting security in the area could not be implemented diplomatically, then we will not hesitate to act. But they know they're in for it, that Hezbollah can outgun them. I just worry whether, if they're already using tactical nukes in Gaza, they wouldn't intend to use them against Hezbollah. I cannot imagine they would not. And indeed, in Christopher Busby's report of yesterday, I explained they already have evidence they've used some tactical nukes in Lebanon. This could be very, very messy, very, very fast. Meanwhile, Haaretz, which is a major newspaper in Israel, has an editorial: Israeli jails must not become execution facilities for Palestinians. The death of six Palestinians in Israeli jails since the war with Hamas began 2 months ago is a flashing warning light. At least two of the prisoners' bodies bore signs of violence. In an autopsy report on one of them disclosed that he had broken ribs and a broken sternum. Evidence of medical neglect, in some cases, raises a suspicion that at least two others died due to a lack of proper medical treatment. These extreme cases come on top of a growing number of complaints from Palestinian prisoners that prison guards and soldiers have been violent toward them. Is anyone surprised? Meanwhile, here's another report. This is from the New Arab. Israel still holding bodies of 17 dead Palestinian detainees, says prisoner group. Israel has refused to reveal how many Palestinian prisoners have died in its custody. A group has said it's holding the bodies of at least 17 detainees, probably because they bear signs of torture and abuse. Here's another report, how nasty this is getting. Israel bombs charity building in Gaza's Jabalia refugee camp. This is from Al Jazeera. This is the aftermath of an Israeli airstrike on the Al Salam Charitable Society building in northern Gaza's Jabalia refugee camp, which killed and injured dozens of Palestinians. Civilians are searching under the rubble for survivors. That is the Israeli way. We'll be right back.
I look at all the lovely people. Helena Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been. Lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door.
The truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. contact Brad at 3dbunkers.com for more details or visit 3dbunkers.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Paudi Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
This, we got Scott Ritter, another major truth teller, reporting that the IDF troops suck, that they're incapable of fighting a real military like Hamas. Let's pick up a few words from him.
You see, Israel's pretending that they have a legitimate right of self-defense. They're saying we have a right of self-defense, that an imminent threat exists. That, you know, there's two things, though. One, in 2004, the International Court of Justice has addressed this very issue. And what they said is Israel has no right to articulate a right of self-defense under Article 51 because a occupier can never claim self-defense against the occupied. Even in the case where there's necessity, they cite the necessity. You can't cite necessity to protect yourself from a threat that comes from within the scene of the crime. And occupied Palestine is the scene of a crime. Israel is an open violation of numerous international laws. So Israel can't cite international law to defend itself from its violations, ongoing violations of international law, even if it's in regard to this. So Israel can sit here and say, oh, there's a terrorist there, a terrorist there. It doesn't matter. Israel is the criminal enterprise. Israel is the nation that's violating international law. And it doesn't excuse. And again, I wanted to make this point.
If you need to say leave, I mean, you could flip the script and say, hey, Hamas told you to leave. You didn't. So yeah, they can just kill your civilians.
But again, let's just talk about the civilians that are dying here, because what Hamas did on October 7th was not a terrorist action. It was a well-coordinated, professionally executed military operation with clearly defined military purposes. And they've lured Israel into the ambush that they've been setting. The fighting that's going on in Gaza right now is going in accordance to the Hamas plan, not the Israeli plan. But the thing is, when Hamas took down the wall and came in, their initial start, look at these guys. These are the highly trained guys wearing uniforms. You know, they have boots, they have uniforms, they have identifying marks, etc. They don't go around haphazardly killing people. They went in with specific targets in mind. If they took out a location, it's because they received resistance. These are the guys that when they capped,
they knew exactly where to go and how much time was on the clock.
But behind them, came another wave of armed people. Some of these were other, because you know Gaza. It's not just Hamas in Gaza. There's also the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. They're also well disciplined, organized, a little bit more crazy, but they're there. But then you have a whole bunch of offshoots. You have the territory. It's like gangs. You have these gangs of people from the neighborhood. I come from the the corner of 5th and 3. We're the 5th and 3rd Lions of Israel.
Scott has so much more to say, but the key point is, there's no right of self-defense when you're the occupying force. Meanwhile, Yemen is ready to stare down a new imperial coalition. Pepe Escobar, brilliant commentator. No one ever lost money building on the ability of the empire, chaos, lies, and plunder to construct a coalition of the willing. Whenever faced with a geopolitical quandary, in every case, duly covered by the reigning rules-based international order, willing applies to vassals seduced by carrots or sticks to follow the letter of the empire's whims. Clue to the latest chapter, Coalition Genocide Prosperity is official, heroic denomination, a trademark of the Benegong PR wizards, is Operation Prosperity Garden, allegedly engaged in ensuring freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. Translation, this is Washington all but declaring war on Yemen's and Nasrallah. An extra U.S. destroyer has already been dispatched to the Red Sea. And Nasrallah sticks to its guns and by no means intimidated. The Houthi military has already stressed that any attack on Houthi assets or Nasrallah missile launch sites would color the entire Red Sea literally red. The Houthis have balls the size of an elephant. Meanwhile, Truth Seeker also reports the U.S. Navy is not prepared for a naval engagement in the Red Sea. We're not equipped for it. We don't actually have the right resources in the right place. Here's Larry Johnson. It looks like the United States, along with 9 allies, Great Britain, Italy, Bahrain, Canada, France, the Netherlands, Norway, the Seychelles, and Spain, on the verge of entangling itself in a new Middle East quagmire as an international armada assembles in the international waters around Yemen. The mission? Stop Yemen from threatening cargo and oil tankers headed to Israel. Tiny Yemen has surprised the West with its tenacity and ferocity in attacking ships trying to ferry containers and fuel to Israel. Yes, this is a violation of international law. And yes, the West is fully justified in trying to thwart Yemen. On paper, it would appear Yemen is outnumbered and seriously outgunned. A sure loser? Not so fast. The U.S. Navy, which constitutes the majority of the fleet sailing against Yemen, has some real vulnerabilities that will limit its action. I think Larry Johnson's on to something here. Meanwhile, we have another international commentator, Ian Pepe, on Israel. We are witnessing the beginning of the end of Israel.
Israel is not just a state. Israel is a project. It's a settler colonial project. And I do think that we are witnessing the beginning of the end of this project, because it rests on 3 pillars. One is material, of course, and there I agree. I mean, when you use an index that looks at sustainability of state according to their material capability, Israel is doing well. And as you mentioned in your introductory remarks, it does well because of mainly because of the United States. So this is a condition that can change. The second pillar is the social coherence of the settler society. And we know that this coherence is non-existent anymore. There is a bit of an optic illusion because of the Hamas operation on the 7th of October that created a sense of unity, but it's not going to cover up for the fragmentation of the society that we have seen until the 7th of October. It seems that coherence that is based on social coherence, that is based on hatred of the Arabs or the Palestinians, and doesn't have very much anything else in common, is not very sustainable. And more importantly than anything else, of course, there is a legitimacy pillar. And Israel enjoys the legitimacy of Western governments or governments in the global north, and therefore there is a sense that it can still be sustainable because of that support of the elites. But it has lost the support of the civil societies. And this is why probably it's the only state in the world that lobbies for its existence, not for its policies, not for its better economic performance, but for its very moral justification, and it's losing that battle. Just a caveat, as an historian, I can tell you that when projects like settler colonialism are reaching their last phase, unfortunately, this can be quite a long period. It doesn't happen in one day or 2 days. And the problem is, of course, that they become more brutal and ruthless.
I think that's exactly right, and that Israel is losing its legitimacy and being condemned by every nation in the world, save those who are speaking big lies, meanwhile cashing in on genocide and Israeli firm is pitching beachfront property in a leveled Gaza. Are you surprised? Military experts, incidentally, are blaming Biden's DEI agenda for our shrinking administration. The administration, instead of creating a lethal force in raising our technology capabilities, has decided to implement woke progressive policies by renaming bases and funding or providing additional funding for DEI programs, and it's proven to be a calamity. Nobody wants to join a woke military. Meanwhile, blood money. Top 10 politicians taking the most money from Israel. Let's see if we can find the list. Joe Biden, number one, $4,346,264. Number two, Robert Menendez, $2,483,205. Number three, Mitch McConnell, $1,953,160. Chuck Schumer, number four, $1,725,324. Number five, Steny Hoyer, $1,620,294. Number six, this one will surprise you, Ted Cruz, $1,299,194. Number seven, Ron Wyden, $1,279,376. Number eight, Dick Durbin, I'm not surprised, $1,126,020. Number nine, Josh Gottheimer, don't even know who the guy is, $1,109,370. 10, Chantel Brown, unbelievable. How about that? Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. It tells you the extent to which our Congress is under the control of the Israeli government. They are massively under control. And I got to apologize. My website is temporarily causing me to re-enter the blog. It happens intermittently. Just one second. Here we go. Getting back on track. What we have now is a huge story coming out of Colorado, and it turns out this whole Colorado farce goes all the way to the Biden administration. Is anyone surprised that that should be the case? Anyone at all? Colorado court levels saves democracy by banning front runner from the ballot. This is from UN's review. Pick it up there. Can you remember all the way back when Trump was fading in the polls among Republican voters and a third of a century younger DeSantis appeared likely to make the Republican nomination a strong two-man race? Well, Democrats quickly began taking legal action against Trump, culminating today in a Colorado state court denying Trump a spot on the Republican primary ballot and banning the counting of write-in ballots for Trump. How insane is that? Paul Craig Roberts writes, we have a Colorado Supreme Court that is basically convicting Trump prior to a trial. Here's something significant. Zero hedge. Of course. By admin linked to Trump ballot ban in Colorado. Listen to this. While many are focusing on the Ivy League Democrats on Colorado's Supreme Court, who voted to kick Donald Trump off the 2024 ballot, their underlying case itself has a direct link to the Biden administration. The Colorado case against Trump was brought by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, headed by President and CEO Noah Bookbinder. Noah Bookbinder, who sits on the Biden administration Department of Homeland Security Advisory Council, as the Daily Caller's James Lynch reports. Our Constitution clearly states that those who violate their oath of office by attacking our democracy are banned from serving in government. It has been an honor to represent the petitioners, and we look forward to ensuring this vitally important ruling standards. Bookbinder gloated in a press release. It gets better. Bookbinder is a former trial attorney for the Department of Justice Public Integrity Section and former chief counsel for criminal justice in the Senate Judiciary Committee. He repeatedly donated to former President Barack Obama's reelection campaign during his tenure with the Senate, Federal Elections Commission records show. The DHS appointed Bookbinder and 32 other new members to the HSAC in March of 2022 at the council's first meeting under Secretary Mayorkas, who said in a March 2022 press release, together we will ensure that the department is the best position to meet the challenges we cut per day, which, of course, could not be greater than the challenge posed by Donald Trump, who wants to get these miscreants out of office and clean things up. Is anyone surprised? Meanwhile, the lieutenant governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, says, maybe we should take Joe Biden off the ballot in Texas for allowing 8 million people to cross the border. I dare say there's a better case for that than the idea of taking Trump off of the ballot in Colorado because, of course, of this absurd interpretation of the 14th Amendment, the clause that says that if you have participated in an insurrection, this was directed at Confederate soldiers, by the way, if you participated in or incited an insurrection, then you're not allowed to run for public office. Would you believe only 6 years after that proposal, that amendment was adopted, 51 former Confederate soldiers were elected in Congress. 51, just 6 years later. And courts have already ruled that this has no applicability to Donald Trump. So what the hell is going on? Meanwhile, and you'll also not be surprised, California lost the most residents in 2023 as people moved to Florida and other red states. Hopefully, these people don't remake the red states into blue, but we can shove this in California, Governor Newsom's smug face. California lost the most residents in 2023. The bastion of freedom loves to brag about lost 75,423. And the awful state of Florida, it added 365,205 and was one of the fastest growing states along with South Carolina. Let me add, by the way, about this Colorado business. It's brought a whole lot of anti-Trumpers speaking out on defense of Donald Trump. This includes Karl Rove, for example, John Bolton, for example, and a host of others who normally wouldn't say a word in Trump's defense, but they're now speaking out in behalf of Donald Trump over what's wrong here. It is politically absurd. Come, grooving up slowly. Got you.
there. Are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff LLC, 417-932-6419.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendovite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Well, we got a couple other stories here. It appears that the president of Harvard has been under attack for allowing anti-Israel, pro-Palestinian expressions of freedom of speech on the Harvard campus. One would have thought this was an absurd basis for criticism. Is herself an affirmative action appointee? Not only does she have no peer-reviewed publications, I've been informed, but her dissertation appears to be at least in part plagiarized. Thus, we get on Oon Stephen Sellier asking, can academic applicants get away with plagiarizing their DEI statement? I haven't gotten too worked up over evidence of plagiarism in Harvard Affirmative Action President Claudine Gay's sparse record of published academic work. I didn't want to throw the first stone in case it turned out that, say, at 4:37 a.m. on April 13, 2012, on my iSteve blog, I happened to copy and paste a whole paragraph from somebody, but then fell asleep before remembering to attribute it to its author. But so far, I haven't seen any evidence of me having done that. Nevertheless, having posted millions of words. I can't imagine there are an embarrassing clip up of that nature somewhere in my corpus. Meanwhile, it's not like President Gay's epical intellectual breakthrough, for which he became boss of Harvard, was stolen by her from an obscure dissertation in Slovenia. How do we know? Because nobody has accused Gray of ever publishing anything influential or interesting. John McWhorter has a good observation. There are indeed degrees of plagiarism. What we're seeing is just how ordinary a scholar Gay has been. Her main commitment has never been research and writing. It's kind of, let's just get on with it, text-grabbing, typical of, one, newbies, two, people less than deeply focused on writing convention, and three, in a hurry. Scholars do it all the time, but not usually ones beyond a certain, well, gravitas. Her only 11 real papers is thus unsurprising. She may really have not known she had done anything wrong. So here it's saying, and this would appear to be a correction of what I'd been told, that she may have 11 publications. Well, that's pretty damn modest. I'd make a hell of a Harvard president with like over 200 published articles and 40 books and having been on editorial journals and all that sort of thing. Meanwhile, Paul Craig Roberts has published a very disturbing piece on exactly what's going on. That we're being subjected to discrimination, only this time it's anti-white. Color privilege, the return of racial discrimination. Check it out. Right back taking your calls.
People who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.